Chop Talk is brought to you by the Kosho School of Karate's premium martial arts training equipment. Frustrated with the low quality of the big manufacturers, the hassle and expense of custom-made equipment, or the months-long delivery times offered by the Japanese brands, if your order ever arrives at all? Kosho offers makiwara, iron sandals, specialty punching bags, and other premium martial arts training equipment, all at great prices and great delivery times. Kosho equipment is guaranteed to be high quality and heavy duty, exactly what serious traditional martial artists demand. Contact the Kosho School of Karate for more information. Go to www.koshoequip.com or email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com. Kosho, premium martial arts training equipment for the serious martial artist. Hey everybody, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. Wherever you listen to the show, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, be sure to check out the photos from this week's show on Facebook. This week's guest, the man who fought them all and a true American karate pioneer, Victor Moore. In the show, Sensei Moore talks about how he began training in the martial arts in the 1950s, his early teachers and his old school training, and his path to opening the first karate school in Cincinnati. And he also gets into some of the discrimination that he faced during his career. Sensei Moore started martial arts in a very different time, and it's tough to hear what he had to go through to get where he is today. You can find out more about Victor Moore and his organization, the Traditional World Karate Association, at www.twka.co. Sensei Moore will be holding a seminar on Saturday, December 16th in Wilmington, North Carolina. The seminar flyer is not out yet, but I will post it on the Chop Talk Facebook page as soon as it is. In the meantime, you can get more details by contacting Victor Moore on Facebook, giving him a call at 910-655-4560. And also be sure to check out his videos on YouTube, Vic Moore, the man who fought them all, Forgotten Fury, and Put Up Your Dukes, spelled D-U-X. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. You know, first, I really wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk with me and be on the show. We've talked a few times by phone, and it's always fascinating. So I really hope that the listeners are going to get a lot out of this also.
I'm pretty sure they will.
I think they will. You know, so my first question is, when I had heard of you as this tournament champion, and I've heard all these stories. And so for example, Mike Awad told me that when he and his brothers were first looking to find a karate instructor, what he did was he went all around Cincinnati and watched all the classes. And at that time, there were some really well-known karate guys in Cincinnati. There was Takeyoshi Nagamine had a school here. At that time, Bill Dimitrik had his school here, but he said when he saw you, you were tougher than all of them. So he knew that you were the one that he wanted to work out with. But I never really knew how you got to that point. You know, where you started in the martial arts and how you got involved. And this is the 50s or 60s. You know, where did you find places to train in Cincinnati, Ohio? And what was it, 1950, 1960 when you started?
Yeah, back in 19. I actually started in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
I was 7 years old, and I had a couple of guys from the military were just showing some of the kids some bit and pieces, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
But not until around 55 or 56, there was a fellow by the name of Ron Williams who had got out of the military that was teaching. Well, he wasn't teaching, but he was practicing close to my house up on a hill. And I had already been taught all these bits and pieces, and I said, well, I know some of that stuff, and I done studied judo and some boxing and all. I said, I wonder if he would show me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, being a young kid like that, you know, 13, 14 years of age, we kind of thought we knew quite a bit anyway.
Right.
But when he finally accepted me as one of his students, after trying to tell me that I'm too young and this is not for kids, this is for men, and mm-hmm. and this is taught to kill and all that stuff, he never could discourage me.
You know, a lot of the guys at that time wouldn't take anybody younger than, what, 15, 18 years old. I mean, that was a cutoff in a lot of places.
Yeah, 18, yeah. 17, 18 at the youngest.
Right.
And even no female.
You couldn't do that today.
So anyway, I had been lifting a little weights. I had done box at the YMCA. I've been doing judo, learning bits and pieces of his karate, so I thought I knew something.
Right.
But here's a fellow that was running collars and doing real moves and all, and when he finally let me get in his training, we had to do all these strenuous exercise, and we wasn't in a dojo. We out in the woods, so had to beat on trees. I had to do my pull up on a branch, doing push ups in the grass and whatnot.
Now, were you in one of the parks here in Cincinnati, or were you outside of town when you were doing this?
No, I was. This is out in Cummingsville.
Okay.
Up from my house. I lived in a cubby sack, and up from my house on a hill was the projects, and he used to go out into the field and practice, and I could look up from my house and see him up there going through all these steps that I had seen Oyama doing.
Right.
Years ago, and I said, well, that's that stuff that I want to learn. That's that karate.
Right.
So he finally started working with me, and I'm going through all the steps and the stances, and he was teaching me more or less kung fu to start off, mm-hmm. which was a soft system of karate. Open hand blocks, just raising your arm, blocking in a circular motion and stuff like that, getting down in low stances. So your legs had to be in shape. And he thought he was going to make me quit. I was going to maybe just break down and cry and go back down the hill.
And that would have been it. No one would have ever heard of Victor Moore again.
But to no avail, hey, I hung right in there. And then his brother was about my age, too, and he come out and he wanted to learn some. He put his brother through the same steps, tried to make him quit, and his brother wouldn't quit. Clouded up a few times, but now I had me a sparring partner, you might say.
Yeah.
So we was able to practice together there, and we had to go through all the basic techniques over and over and over. And I said, well, when are we going to learn something new? When you perfect this, you may think. So we had to do just one technique over and over and over. So many times that people this day and time.
No.
No way.
No, absolutely. You
they
know,
wouldn't last, and we had to do it several hundred times, one technique.
Right. And that's what I see when I teach. A lot of the new students we come in, I think that they feel life is like a video game, and they're going to practice these things two or three times or come to a handful of classes.
Yeah, no way.
And that's not it. You have to do it hundreds and thousands of times for years and years to get good at these things.
Well, even after 5 or 6 years working with him, and pretty much every day, when I get in a after school, man, I'm running up the hill to practice. My parents saying, boy, when you going to get your homework done? Boy, you get down here and do your homework. All you want to do is that karate juju stuff and all that. Well, yeah. Boy, when you going to come and eat? Get in here and eat. No, I'll eat later. No, you eat now. You know, that's how parents were then. They weren't too much for all this martial arts stuff back then anyway.
No, but you were obsessed.
When I come home, all bruised up. What in the world are you doing? Why are you got all them bruises on you? You're going to quit that stuff. I was just beginning. What are you talking about? So
right.
After, you know, several years now, he says, well, we don't have associations except for the Japanese Karate Association. I said, well, why we can't join that? Well, Americans can't join the Japanese Karate Association because that's overseas and just for the Japanese. That
right.
was the only organization that he knew of, even.
Right.
And so anyway, we had a white belt and a black belt. And after 5 or 6 years, he taught me the Taiyoka katas and all, and a Chinese kata and all, and worked with me on some Japanese karate, which was called Kempo back in them days. And it later became Shotokan, but it was the Japanese karate, so I didn't learn two styles of karate.
Right.
And knowing the difference, but he wanted me to start off with the soft system so that I understand that you don't have to apply a lot of strength in the martial art. And then we got into the Japanese karate where you had to put a lot more snap and power behind everything, but yet knowing there's a soft way too. So that's where I got my start. His name was Ryan Williams, and he was a grade digger for his job, and he was known all over the city as the grave digger.
Huh. So, that's an interesting job for a karate guy, I guess.
Yeah, so he was kind of spooky anyway, you might say. But anyway, he awarded me a black belt.
Oh.
And told me how strict I have to be, and this is just the beginning because he's got a lot more to teach me.
Hmm.
Well, there was a judo school up in Cincinnati, and that was the first dojo that I'd seen, which was a storefront, but it was considered a dojo.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents was driving by there, and I looked over, and I said, wow, there's a judo school. That's that stuff that I know, that judo.
Right.
Well, you can't go in there, boy. That's, we were uptown. That's just for white people, you know.
Wow.
Black people can't go in a white person's establishment.
Wow.
But it's judo. No. I know some of that stuff. So I had to.
Now hold on a second. I got a question about this. So,
yeah,
nowadays, you know, if you watch CNN or any news, race relations have never been worse in America. Everything's so horrible. But that is a really, I mean, you were doing this in the 1950s, and nowadays, yeah, no one would ever think that I can't go in there because I'm black, or I'm uptown, so you can't go in that white man's business.
That's right.
What did you think of that?
There was like the West End, which was the part of town that we lived in at that time. And you just didn't go uptown to the different places, and you had to go only to certain places that they permitted blacks to go in. Even at that time, you had to ride the back of the bus.
Wow.
Black folks, you know, they complain now, but back in them days, you couldn't sit in the middle or up front. You had to go all the way to the back of the bus. And even later years, when I'd be up in New York or on my way to a place, we had to sit in the back. And if we went to a restaurant, they had to go in and bring my food out on the bus. And up around New York, Chicago, we couldn't get a room. I couldn't get a room. I had to stay with Thomas LaPuppet and some of the other guys, Fred Hamilton, and they had to have certain restaurants for us to go out and eat. So I had already been indoctrinated to this prejudice stigma, how they treat black folks.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialists in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber to increase metabolism, reduce fatigue, and promote faster recovery from injuries. Take their stretching course to increase flexibility and release muscle fatigue. ATAC also offers special courses in static and thermal therapy, foot therapy, and head therapy. Or try a session of ATAC's latest offering, acupuncture therapy, with their fully licensed acupuncture therapist. Want to find out more? ATAC is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Stop into their center located at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.a-tac.net. That's www.a-tac.net. Staff is fluent in English, Portuguese, Spanish, and Japanese.
But anyway, I went into this judo school.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the bows. I've been taught all this stuff.
Right.
I knew to take my shoes off, so they looked at me very strange. I said, may I have permission to come in?
Mm-hmm.
They had to kind of think about it, you know.
Right.
Said, well, what do y'all think? Well, yeah, it's okay. Well, come on in, boy. And I said, well, I know judo, which I did know some. I knew all my break falls, Yukimi, and I knew several foes, and I was pretty fair at it at the time.
Right.
So they took me in and started doing randori with me, and I had to do a lot of break falls, being thrown. I became the uki, you know, and all.
Sure.
So I could take it. They thought maybe I was going to quit. There was no tournaments, and you wasn't teaching for money, so they didn't care if you quit anyway. You only paid
right.
a small amount of money. But they was teaching because of the art of it.
Right.
And I got pretty fair, you know, with it. The instructor there was very strict in judo himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, lo and behold, two guys come in, and they wanted to have permission to start a karate class in the back room. And most people don't understand that all of us old-timers, I kind of call ourselves,
right,
from the 50s and the 60s, we old-timers. There was only judo around. There was no karate schools. Everything was judo schools.
Boy, has it changed since then.
And karate was in the background, and that's why most people understand the martial art, and they would start off saying, do you know the judo chop? Do the judo chop.
Because you were doing the karate chop in the back of the judo school, and somebody who didn't know any better just blended them together.
Well, I wanted to go back there and get into karate classes. So, well, you had to get permission from them to see if they let you in. They thought it over. They finally let me in. This is the first, actually, dojo school that was teaching karate in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the back room. And the instructor was Harvey Eubanks, who was teaching Goju karate. Well, it was pretty fair. But then Bill Demetric wanted to start teaching his form of Kempo, which later became known as Shotokan, but karate back in them days was just really called Kempo.
Now, he is now known as, I believe, a Chito, C-H-I-T-O, Ru guy, but at that time, he was teaching something different, is that right?
That's right, that's right. And he did that for a year or so, and I was in the judo class, and then I would go to the karate class, and then we had a Chinese gentleman by the name of Chong Ling, who was a University of Cincinnati student, exchange student from China, and he came by the dojo, and he wanted to know if he can teach some of his karate. And its style was said to be some of the first forms of karate back in the centuries ago, Shaoyun Fang. Well, his method of teaching of the Chinese system was very strict. We got beat with bamboo sticks. And we got kicked and chopped and pinched. We just got abused, you know. And
wow.
You had to kick over a rope, hold your leg up waist high, and hold it out there for several minutes, kicking on a four count for balance and coordination, and bringing it back in and holding your leg up and then putting it back out and bringing it back until you about dropped, till your leg just gave out, and then you got beat for not holding your leg up. So classes were strict. Now, Demetric and Harvey Eubanks were strict, but now this is ridiculous strict.
Wow.
Now we were taught in a manner that nobody in this day and time would even go through and take.
No,
doing
absolutely
fingertips,
not.
Fingertips, knuckle push-ups, wrist push-ups, you know.
Now, was there a difference in the age? So, Chang Ling, he was a younger guy. He was going to the University of Cincinnati. Were Demetric and Eubanks a little bit older? Was that part of the difference?
I think so. You know, somewhat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they was a little older. Mm-hmm.
And how much of the difference did you see between the different styles that all these different people were teaching at that time?
There was a lot a difference in the style back then than what it is nowadays.
Oh.
As your Goju karate, you swung your arm out and snapped with your two knuckles, where your Shotokan and or Kempo, punching more to the center, more of a linear punch and all, which was a lot better. And then there's Chong Ling with his Chinese karate. Everything went back to that soft system that I had first picked up. And the kata, he starts showing a two-man kata, which was called the Rising Sun. Maybe somebody out there might from the Chinese system know about the kata, the Rising Sun, which was a two-man kata. And I finally got up with, in later years, Ed Parker, who also knew it, and we used to demonstrate together a two-man kata. That's where two people is fighting in a kata and going down the floor and coming back.
Now, that's interesting because
interesting.
In karate, in Okinawan karate, you don't necessarily see the two-man kata. You might do the bunkai, but not the kata. In some Japanese sword styles, I practice jodo, which is a short staff. Like, all the katas are a sword versus a jo, and it's two-man. So that's interesting that the Chinese style has an actual empty hand two-man form. I'd love to see that. If someone has the video of that, please forward it. I'd love to take a look.
Yes. And then later the school folded, and I went out on Reading Road to another judo and karate class, and there was a gentleman by the name of Jim Wax. And Jim Wax was teaching Shorin-Ryu karate that he had learned from Hansei Yushiro. And the instructors all of this time had learned it in the military. And naturally, it wasn't taught for any tournaments during them days.
No.
They, all of those instructors was taught very strict. So when they started teaching, naturally everything was strict, handed down by them.
Right. Now, these guys, were they were in the military. They were stationed in Japan, Okinawa, Korea. Or
yeah.
Was it a mixture?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Mostly Japan. Mm-hmm. And this Jim Wax, now he was also strict. All these instructors back then were strict. He had us outside in the parking lot on black tire with our feet burning. If anybody ever been on black tire working out,
God,
they know what I'm talking about.
Wow.
So after the feet got blistered up, you know, then you come inside and doing duck hops all the way around the floor until you drop. I thought he was crazy, too, but I hadn't been around all these other crazy people, so it's just another crazy person.
It was nothing new to you.
They was fixing the roof on the building, and somebody evidently coming through dropped the roof intact. And I had stepped on this tank doing my duck hops and going around the floor. You could hear a little tick-tack, you know, tick, tick, tick.
Right.
The instructor stops and says, "What's that noise? What is that? Everybody hold it." "Oh, go ahead on it. Tick, tick, tick," doing these duck hops. "Wait a minute, I hear that sound again. Look up under your feet. Somebody got something stuck under their foot." I looked under mine, and there's a roof intact that went through my foot, and good thing Ron Williams had me kicking trees, callousing my feet and hands and everything else, because I would have been in a world of trouble with that roof intact in my foot, right in the ball of my feet.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. I can't believe you didn't feel that, but it didn't. It probably didn't even make it through the callus, did it?
Well, it made it through, but I didn't feel it because it was so thick. Yeah. So I pulled the tack out, gave it to him. He put it away, and more duck hops on around the floor, and everybody dropping and carrying on and doing push-ups till you drop.
Wow.
And we seen that Shorin-Ryu was even a little different. Movements and whatnot. But being that I had several different instructors before and they're all strict and hard, I could take all that he had to put out.
Right.
And in that same karate school, there was a gentleman by the name of John Osaka who came to the judo school. And me knowing judo, I wanted to study more judo, and here's one of the top judokas in the world, John Osaka from the Kodokan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never been thrown, and I had him in a ogoshi almost throwing him, and he countered, and boy, I hit the floor, and from that day on, all I ever seen was the ceiling. So he just wore me out. But he taught me all the counter moves because I was in judo and I was pretty good at it.
Right.
And getting better and better, because I done had two or three different judo instructors. And this Jim Wax was teaching this showing Ryu karate, but I also wanted to study more judo with John Osaka.
And he wasn't going to give you a chance to get another throw on him. He was going to be on the offense from then on forward.
Oh, I never even came close no more. So his teaching me counter throws, I give credit to, because when I fought Mike Stone years later, mm-hmm. Mike Stone was sweeping everyone, because all the karate guys back then knew judo. They knew sweeping and throws and carrying on.
Sure.
And it was permitted in tournaments later years to sweep, groin kicks, throws. Plus, that Taekwondo, they scared to death of them sweeps and throws and groin kicks nowadays.
Sure. Well, kids
going around in a circle kicking. Boy, that never worked back in our day. They all got swept on the ass so fast.
Absolutely not. Well, one of the ways that I heard it was that the Taekwondo tournaments were all closed tournaments, and a karate guy might come in and beat him with a sweep or beat him by a kick to the groin, and then the next Taekwondo tournament, that move was illegal. And
so they started having their own tournaments. They were the first ones to start hosting their style of karate, because they was getting beat so bad. Hmm. So they didn't want the Japanese system, Okinawan system, coming in there, whooping up on them. But giving credit to John Osaka for his sweeps, because Mike Stone used to throw this sweep and this ridge hand and catch people between the eyes and sweep and floor them, send them skyborne, and down they go and to the ambulance that be at the door. And back then, in tournaments, the ambulance was at the door.
Ready to take you guys out.
They were at the door, and they haul one person off to the hospital, come back for another one. That's how rough and hard it was. Well, he had me in his hook for his sweep and throwing his rich hand, and I say, oh, Lord, I'm in his trap. And thanks to John Osaka showing me all these counters, I countered him and swept him and ridge hand inside of his ridge hand.
Uh-huh.
And sent him 3 feet in the air. Spinning, and he come down on his head and shoulder and dislocated his shoulder. So thanks to John Osaka teaching me that, and me knowing judo so well, helped me to beat Mike Foster, who had 91 straight victory, never been defeated until we fought. One of the interesting things about our fight, I'm a drop kicker.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Harrison is a drop kicker. Fred Wren was a drop kicker. And Mike Stone was a drop kicker. And you didn't get away from my drop kick.
You knew you could get a point on that every time.
I went down to a drop kick on Mike Stone, and he blocked it. And I looked up at him. Mm. He looked down at me and smiled. Like, you didn't get me, did you? So later in the match, he did his drop kick, and I blocked his. And we're blocking with our legs at that now.
Uh-huh.
And he looked up, and I looked down and smiled at him. I blocked yours. So we knew we were going to meet one day, you know.
Right.
But we went back and forth. But when he got ready to try and sweep me and throw that ridge hand, I put the counter on him and won the match for the light heavyweight championship of the world.
Now, Mike Stone was in.
Go ahead.
Mike, Mike Stone was. He was from Hawaii originally. Is that correct? So he was more of a West Coast guy. And you're in Cincinnati, so you're Midwest. So when you guys were on the tournament circuit, did you run into each other that often, or was it?
No, not at all. Most of the guys on the West Coast fought on the West Coast in the Rocky Mountain region. Mm-hmm. And us guys, Thomas LaPuppet and Jimmy Jones and Artie Simmons and Lou DiGallo, most of all of us guys, we fought on the East Coast and in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. But yet, once in a while at the big tournaments, everybody would meet. But learning, people want to know, well, Vic Moore, how did you beat all of these guys? How is it that you was so good? And all? Well, yeah. Look at all the different instructors that I had that had learned overseas in Japan and all the different styles. Well, when I went to college after working with Jim Wax and showing Ru Karate, and going through his abuse of training. I went to college at Central State College up in Wilberforce, Ohio, trying to study engineering, mm-hmm. and spending all of my time in the gym. Right. And there was John Henderson, who was a wrestling champion, over in Pennsylvania, that he and I became friends, mm-hmm. and we spent all of our times working out together. And he was the state champion in Pennsylvania, and he wanted to learn some of that karate, and I definitely wanted to learn more wrestling.
Sure. But,
we kind of got together, and we spent all of our time in the gym working out with one another, and I learned quite a bit more about Greco-Roman wrestling, mm-hmm. and he learned quite a bit about karate. And there was a karate instructor by the name of Barry Yusuta, who was teaching Shotokan karate. I already knew Shotokan karate.
Yeah, you had studied that before with Ron Williams, maybe?
Yes, and Bill Demetri. Mm-hmm. So he wouldn't permit you to wear any belts. And in all these different schools now, you had to start all over again. You couldn't walk in there with your belts on and whatnot. You had to take them off, start with a white belt, and work your way on up the ladder. But
right.
We didn't care back then because, hey, you could take it.
Right.
And it wasn't about the belts anyway.
Right.
Barry Yasuda, and he was members of the Japanese Karate Association.
Okay.
And we didn't have all these different karate associations back then.
Right.
There was an association that we didn't know about, the USKA under Dr. Robert E. Trist, that started in 46 and mm-hmm. all. But that was in Phoenix, Arizona, and it was small at that time anyway.
Right.
So I wanted to be a member
internet,
of the
no
Japanese
Google.
Karate Association. And he says, no, Americans can't join the Japanese Karate Association.
Wow, yeah.
Well, I knew black folks wasn't going to be able to join, so I'm used to it, so it didn't bother me because I'm getting better and better. And he was strict as he can be.
Now,
more of the Japanese ways and katas and even picking up some of the language, you know, while I was in college.
Sure. Now, as far as the Japanese go, I was in Japan for a little while, and I'm not sure if they cared whether you were white or black or Chinese. If you were not Japanese, that's as far as they took it. So I mean, they weren't letting you in because they were black, but they weren't letting any white guys in at that time either, right?
Right, as far as I know.
Right.
This is Mike Tarvin of Tarvin Plumbing Company. You may have heard me answering questions as a plumbing expert on the Gary Sullivan Show over the years. I'm here today to make you aware of our company. We perform plumbing repairs of all types. We've been in business since 1907, through five generations of family members. That's 109 years of providing top quality workmanship and outstanding service. If you're having issues with leaks, stoppages, water heaters, fixtures, or piping, we're here to help. Spring rains may be taking a toll on your sump pump. To help out, ask us about our summer sump pump special. We can inspect the existing pump and replace it if necessary for a special summer price. We can also inspect or add a battery backup and other devices for extra security to keep you high and dry. We offer you peace of mind for your plumbing system with reliable, trustworthy service backed by years of experience. Tarvin Plumbing is a Cincinnati company with an appreciation of the wide range of plumbing challenges this city offers. So if you or someone you know has a need for plumbing repairs of any type, please think of us at Tarvin Plumbing. You can reach us at tarvinplumbing.com. That's tarvinplumbing.com. Thank you.
Well, I was there at the college for a couple of years, and when I go home during the summer, I try and get an apprenticeship, you know, try and get work. And I was told that, well, blacks can't get into engineering.
Wow.
So I got discouraged, you know. I was doing construction work during the summer and all. Anyway, I was learning how to read blueprints, all about constructions, wiring, and everything else. So I wanted to build skyscrapers and bridges and everything else, but that was out of our field.
Wow.
As I talked to a lot of engineering firms, and I quit college. I told my mom I quit. She says, boy, what you mean you quit? I say, why should we spend all this money going to college and going to come out and can't even get into the field that I'm going to school for?
Wow.
Well, what are you going to do? At that moment, it hit me. I say, I know. She said, what kind of job are you going to do? You got to find a job. I said, I will. I'm going to open up a karate school. Boy, are you crazy? You're going to do what? you can't make no living doing that stuff, you know? I said, well, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
And I open up the first all karate school, no judo, just all karate school in the city of Cincinnati on Beekman Avenue.
Oh, wow.
That's historical. That is history, which was one of the first all karate schools in the state of Ohio.
Sure.
I used to travel around looking for karate schools. We used to have all this judo, and nobody is teaching karate in a karate school. Everybody is teaching in the back room of a judo school. Heck, I'm going to open up only a karate school, which I did.
Wow.
And I pulled it off.
Yeah.
I started making a livelihood. Not much, but hey, I pulled it off. Now I'm getting a handful of students, and now we all are going to tournaments together up around, up in Canada. Those were some of the first tournaments in North America was in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have tournaments in the United States, pretty much. So we had what was called in a club tournament. We would go to three or four different schools would get together and have an in a club tournament. But there was no real sanctioned karate tournament until Robert Trias started in Chicago there was around 63 and 63.
Mm-hmm.
Also, New York guys start hosting a tournament. Gary Alexander was one of the champions up that way back at that time. And I was going to Canada competing. Soroka, Master Soroka, was hosting the tournaments up there, and they had a lot of Japanese, you know, coming in, and even Koreans. And if you weren't Oriental, you just didn't get nowhere. And that's when the Koreans had a meeting with all the Koreans, and only Koreans could go in to the meeting. Ernest Lib, who was a Caucasian guy, he was permitted to go in. His wife was Korean, mm-hmm. and he knew how to speak the language. And when he come out, he said, boy, do you know what they're trying to do? They're going to start taking over karate in the United States and around the world. And how they're going to do it is by cheating.
They're
going to make sure that only Koreans win. Not going to call any points but for Koreans. Yeah. And if he's not a Korean, then a Korean stylist. And if it's not a Korean stylist, a friend of a Korean.
Wow.
Well, they kicked it off. They started, and that's when they would only have their own tournament. Well, all these Koreans was coming over here off the ship and whatnot as white belts and brown belts and all.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they're fifth and sixth degree black belts, which was unheard of back then, to be high-ranking black belts. We say, what the heck? These people, and we go by and see them practicing and all, and they look like our white belt.
Right. What do you call that, the Trans-Pacific promotion?
Well, huh?
What do you call that, the Trans-Pacific promotion? You go from Korea to the U.S., and all of a sudden you get bumped up in rank?
Well, here's how they got over here. They was coming over here because they were saying that they were going to open up different businesses that we needed. We was telling our congressmen and all that we don't need these Koreans coming over here because mm-hmm. we got our own karate instructors. Well, they're going to be opening up stores. So all these Koreans came here to open up stores and wig shops and whatnot.
Right.
And they all had, now the strategy was that they had to support each other. They had to. Now these Koreans, if you talk to any of the older Koreans, they will admit it themselves. Mm-hmm. And they had their grocery stores and they had to support get their groceries from each other. They had to support each other living in one room, driving one raggedy van, and next thing you know, they got two vans. Next thing, I mean, the Mexicans may copy it off of them, but the Koreans was doing it first, you know, and they all was living in one room, five and six families, and next thing you know, each one got their own. And now they open up karate schools, though. They came here saying they're going to run a business.
Right.
That's why all these hotels and motels along our main highways are Oriental. All these stores are Oriental. Every Oriental just about owns some kind of store. Look at it in your city.
Right.
That's how they got going. Well, they start now open up their karate schools. And during this time, that's when all these kung fu movies was going on. So that was hot. Well,
sure.
Now, every Korean karate school would have taekwondo on it and also kung fu because everybody's wanting to learn this kung fu.
And that's because that's what was on TV or the movies.
That was on TV and in the movies. Oh, we all used to go to the movies and watch them kung fu movies. Now all of us are guilty of that. Yes,
right.
Sirree.
Right.
We used to stay in the theaters two and three times just watching these kung fu movies. Because they were so funny. But yes, so cool, you know.
Right.
Well, the Koreans got smart enough and says every school put kung fu on it. Well, people didn't know the difference.
Sure.
When they go, they say, oh, kung fu school. They go inside, and they think they're learning kung fu, and these Koreans are teaching them taekwondo and all.
Right.
You know, these stupid fools, you know, they don't know the difference, you know.
Right. Well, which is, it's unfortunate, but it's great marketing.
Off, you know, that's how all of them got started.
Right.
They came here to open up stores. They got stores. They made enough money to get their karate schools going, and they got very successful at it by cheating. You couldn't win at a at a Korean karate tournament. I don't care how good you were.
Yeah.
They weren't going to call a bit of your points. And then they wouldn't even let you come to their tournament.
Right. Now, it's unfortunate that they, you know, rigging the tournaments so that one, either the Koreans or their friends or somebody who's studying Taekwondo wins. That's not the right way to do it. But you can sort of understand their frustration because the Japanese were doing the same thing to them. And like you said, you and they were not allowed to join the Japanese Karate Association. So I don't know that, you know, having your own tournaments and rigging those too is the right solution, but I understand.
But the Japanese and Okinawan karate people let everyone compete and compete somewhat fair.
Okay.
Fair.
Okay.
You know, but there was just so much politics, you know, cheating going on.
Right.
Everyone wanted their own style to win and whatnot. And to beat their style, you had to really dominate that match.
Thanks again to Sensei Victor Moore for joining us this week. You can find out more about Victor Moore and his organization, the Traditional World Karate Association, at www.twka.co. Sensei Moore will be holding a seminar on Saturday, December 16th in Wilmington, North Carolina. The seminar flyer is not available yet, but you can get more details by contacting Victor Moore on Facebook, calling him directly at 910-655-4560. And be sure to check out his videos on YouTube. Vic Moore, The Man Who Fought Them All, Forgotten Fury, and Put Up Your Dukes, D-U-X. Thanks for listening. We'll have more stories from Victor Moore on next week's show. Nihei Nibiru, and Mata Ya. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.